welcome to this week's episode of This Is My Son. I'm your host, Kathy Fisher, and with me this week, I have Internet Darling, a bearded boy, big, strong bearded boy who's online on Twitter.com, a fellow podcaster. It is, of course, Mark Popham. Hi, Mark.
Hi. The only bearded boy to have a podcast.
The first
by law.
How did you get that sweet situation?
I killed a guy.
Oh, the preview, there's like, can only be one.
Yeah, there can only be one bearded boy podcaster.
Mm-hmm.
And and I just did the finger motion across my neck when I said that.
Uh-huh. But so then did you have to grow the beard, or is it the podcasting
I took
began
his
after?
Beard.
You took his beard and attached
yeah,
it to
I
your own
flinsed
thing.
It from, you know, you can't grow beards naturally. That's an old wives' tale.
I did not know that.
You have to flinse them off of other people.
So there's really only one beard that's been passed around for a while.
Well, there's a couple beards now. But yes, but everybody you see wearing a beard beat someone else in hand-to-hand combat and then took their beard.
Is this only beards that are considered, like, good beards? Because I've seen a lot of really shitty beards that, like, I feel like probably don't deserve the title.
Sadly, no. You have to fight people for shitty beards, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is a whole new world I just hadn't even realized.
Yeah.
Well, that incredibly interesting topic aside, Mark, this week you presented me with a son, and I think it took you a little bit of consideration before you came up with it. So would you like to introduce your son to us?
Okay, well, and yes, it took me a little while because to the point where I was like, wait, am I like extremely depressed? Because I feel like I do not make sons like I used to. Like, I used to, for instance, the son that I'm talking about now, I deeply, deeply enjoyed for a period of maybe 6 years. But nowadays, I feel like I get deeply involved with, like I will love a folk song about a horse, mm-hmm. about a beautiful, strong horse for, like, 4 weeks. And I'll just listen to that song over and over again. But I didn't want to be like, hey, listen to this folk song about a horse, just the one, and this
I don't know,
is
that
my...
feels like that would be a totally novel experience for this podcast.
That is true. But I think it's also a novel experience for this podcast if I present to you a son that I don't know if it's my son. If I'm like, is this my son?
Mm-hmm.
Because the son that I am presenting is not a son that I really listen to enormously now. It's an older son, and in fact, when I was listening to it now, first off, as it, like, a white, straight, cis American guy, most of the things I like are terrible.
There's
a degree to which looking at stuff I really liked in college is just it's stuff about how sad white, straight American guys are very important and should be listened to, which is not a great look at this point in my life. But so listening to this son this week in preparation, both to figure out what I wanted to send you and what just to make sure that it was actually something I loved, there was this very interesting sensation of, like, anhedonia where listening to these songs, I felt nothing for them, but knew every word to the point, like, it felt like I had dreamed all of these songs. But that's a really bad. So I present the son to you kind of an interest that and obviously save your answer for later. But is this good at all? Is this a good son?
It's a good question.
And my son this week is the band Guided by Voices. My first experience with Guided by Voices, my brother worked in a record store and he brought home this very weird CD, which I didn't realize, but Guided by Voices is a band that centers around a man named Robert Pollard, who is basically a Midwestern jock who, through some interdimensional tear, like from between his brain and the pop music dimension, just writes pop songs compulsively and without ceasing. And some of them are extremely good, and some of them are just like whirring sounds, or like he'll put the sounds of snoring onto songs. And he writes songs nonstop. And so the CD that my brother had was actually a compilation of songs from his first like four albums. And I listened to it and thought some of the songs were incredible, and some of the songs were not technically songs. But I slowly but surely I got really into this band, and for about 6 years, probably from when I was like maybe 18 to 22, it was my most listened band. And since there's so much of it, there is just from like released albums and EPs is 40 hours. And that's not counting a series of albums that he released that's called The Suitcase, which is just tape recordings of songs that he did where it was just him sitting alone, like yelling into a tape recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And those songs he didn't even shape to the degree to which the songs in his normal albums are shaped.
Which is not very much.
Yes. Listening to a Guided by Voices album sounds a lot like listening to someone coming up with the ideas for pop songs and recording what other people would then be like, okay, this is really good. Let's go back. We'll add some more verses. We'll flesh it out. We'll record it with like competence and not yelling.
Mm-hmm.
But he did not do that. Robert Pollard did not want to go back and record these songs. And many of them are less than 90 seconds long.
Yeah, I mean, so that's, if I can start like coming in with where my initial reactions with it to it. Yeah, I mean, even not knowing the sort of background and character of Robert Pollard so much, the main thing that struck me is like, this sounds like a series of demos.
Yes.
And it's like, it's like, I don't know, I kind of think you can look through a famous artist's sketchbook and be like, oh, wow, there's the seed of something like really great there. Like, oh, this is really, you know, genuinely good quality. And then you think, I want to see the full version. Like, I want to see the one that's done.
Yes.
Because that's how I felt like, because there are so many songs, first of all, so many songs, period, on both of the albums you gave me, which were B-1000 and Alien Lanes, I believe.
Yes.
So many songs where you just like, yeah, oh, this, the, you know, the melody is really good, there's a really good hook here or something, and then this, you know, it sort of goes for 90 seconds and then it stops. And it's like it never gets to the song structure that you expect.
Yes. The longest song on B-1000 is 3 minutes and 5 seconds long. And there are 20 songs on B-1000.
Yeah, there's so many.
Yeah. And also, the experience of listening to these albums is like, it's almost as if you're flipping between radio station channels. Sometimes because he actually like, the connector between songs will be like a sound effect of like something clicking or something. So part of the reason that I was like, I don't know if this is something that human beings like to listen to anymore, is that I feel like this is very clearly Midwestern indie rock from like, I think B-1000 came out in like 92. Alien Lanes came out in like 94.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of being guitar driven and having nonsensical lyrics and like a lot of fuzz and things like that, that seems very like of a time and a place. But I don't know if anybody does music like this in 2016.
I don't know. Well, see, the thing is with the current music landscape is I feel like there must be someone doing everything.
That's true.
Right? Because there's the ability, the barrier to entrance for being a musician now is like zero.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to assume there are people who are doing like lo-fi, grunge, guitar rock. Obviously, there are people doing guitar rock.
Yes.
Or garage rock, rather. There always will be. But yeah, it definitely is. It's got a very 90s vibe. And I don't know. I guess I have never really understood, and maybe you can explain this to me, the sort of the appeal of like the lo-fi sound.
Yes.
And the sort of the fuzzy guitar centric sort of thing. Like what, because it's not like aesthetically pleasant from a, like a melodic, you know, like, oh, the beautiful music, right? It's not,
yes,
that's not what you're getting, right? You're getting, it's like the rawness of it, I, yes, assume. But I don't, can you explain sort of where that appeal is?
I mean,
is?
I, part of the reason I wanted to talk about my voices is that I'm not sure if I know at this point. Like,
but at one point you
like,
did, right?
Clearly at some point. And like listening to individual songs, like there's individual songs that I absolutely love. And I guess part of the, I appreciate the lo-fi-ness partially because I really appreciate the concept of Robert Pollard as somebody who's basically doing, you know, the writing thing where you close your eyes and you do loops with your hand and then you just start writing words. And you see, it feels almost like that's what he is doing, just in terms of he's making so many pop songs to the point that maybe if he tried to stop, then his actual skull would explode. Part of my goal in doing this is being like, does this only sound good to me because I'm a white guy who grew up in the Midwest? And it's like very much like a, like drinking bad beer, white guy music. Like, is this good at all?
I mean, I think it is. It definitely has something.
Yeah. And like individual songs I absolutely love. And I love the idea that he just kind of is not interested in, because, okay, so the backstory about Robert Pollard is that he like was a high school college athlete. He pitched a couple no-hitters. he then graduated. He like he was a school teacher for a really long time, like a high school history teacher, and would then just drink in his garage with his friends playing music and like playing in bar bands and occasionally recording these albums of music that human beings did not want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
That like, I think he was in Dayton, and that in Dayton, Ohio, people did not, like the band was known for putting on a really good live show, partially because they all got drunk,
mm-hmm,
like very drunk while playing. But like they would release albums that did not sound like what people wanted at all. Mm-hmm. And like his like there's like years of him in the garage and his wife being like, please stop spending all this money recording these albums that like people do not like to listen to. And then eventually the time came when people liked to listen to music that was not fun or good to hear.
And it was the 90s and it was a blessed time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm being extremely dickish to music that I actually really like, but like it is it's kind of difficult. It is difficult to make a case to somebody who is not already on board, I guess.
I mean, I can see the appeal or the sort of, there's a certain amazement, I would say, like I have him, it's that it seems like he just has like an endless well of creativity,
yeah,
hanging out in him. And I mean, yeah, like, yeah, it's just like constantly churning out music, and whether it's good or not, he's like, yeah, I'm going to put it on an album.
Put it on tape.
Yeah, we got it.
Yeah, yeah.
But so the thing, another thing that surprised me though, too, is that you, so one of the things you gave me was a, like a bootlegged recording of one of their live shows.
Yes.
From, I guess, around the time that these two albums came out, because it has a lot of the songs from them on it. But the thing that kind of amazes me is that the live show performances are nearly identical to the ones on the album, which it feels like there must not actually be that much spontaneity, or it feels like maybe there's not as much because it can be reproduced.
Yeah.
Like almost perfectly.
So the thing is that it's not that he's too, like, he's just churning this out too fast. The songs that you're getting on the album, that is precisely what he wants these songs to sound like, even to the degree where you're like, he's not doing any of this in any sort of like idiot savant way.
Yeah, it is calculated ultimately.
Yes. But yeah, I enjoy the band, I think. Well, Plague Dogs got a better reception than this band.
No, well, Plague Dogs has, here's the thing. As you said earlier, right, this is very much white dude entertainment.
Yeah.
And I would say that I feel personally a little bit more latitude to come out swinging against it.
Yeah.
Whereas when something's like a very emotionally wrought, delicate animated movie, and I know it has sort of that, it can inspire those types of feelings, I'll be a little bit more delicate. I'm trying to be more honest, straightforward, and aggressive.
Sure, sure.
In response. And this is not at all to say that I didn't like Guided by Voices. Because I totally understand what you're saying and get where you're coming from. And I mean, some of the tracks I genuinely really enjoyed, and I wish that they were 3-minute songs.
Yeah.
that had, you know, like some verses, a chorus, and a bridge.
Yes.
But can you imagine
how if you did a cover album where you just took these songs and like...
And finished them all.
Yeah, you just made like real, like, you know, 3-minute, 11-second songs of these. Like, I'm looking at Alien Lanes right now, and no song on Alien Lanes even hits 3 minutes.
It's exceptional, right? It's just like, it's, where else do you see that? And again, I don't know that much about the genre, but...
I don't think there's anybody who puts as many 30-second songs on their album. Okay, wait. The shortest song on Alien Lanes is 18 seconds long.
Oh my god. Except for that song with the snoring sampling in it, which is so long, seems to me to be about 80 minutes long. Because yeah, I can't stand the sound of listening to snoring.
Which is incredible, because actually that's one of my favorite songs of theirs. If there wasn't someone snoring,
I know,
the entire
right?
thing.
Oh yeah, that snoring sound effect. Sorry, it just like it killed me, destroyed me, it just destroyed my brain.
Yeah, that's an ex supermodel, which is also like, I almost wonder. Okay, so that song features the line, "I write music for soundtracks now. I write music for soundtracks now. It's what I wanted to do anyhow," which. So a lot of his lyrics are extremely vague, but some of them I feel like speak very much to somebody who spent like 20 years recording music in his garage in a town where people just did not want to listen to the music he was making. But also there's another way of, so there's also like a lot of stuff with Guided by Voices in terms of their live performance and like the personas that they have, in which like Robert Pollard drinks an obscene amount on stage, an almost horrifying amount of cheap beer every night. And there's like, there's a degree to which he, like, they kind of become a band for like guys who have to go to work in the morning to watch on stage and be like, wow, I wish I could drink that enormous quantity of beer.
Well, or maybe also too, as a pure escapism thing, because if you're a dude who has to go to work in the morning and you're listening to, you're at the bar watching Guided by Voices perform, you probably are like, yeah, I could do that.
Yeah.
I could quit my job and do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not that good.
Like all these songs are 30 seconds long. Like, I don't think, yeah. And I will definitely cop to, I think part of the reason is that like, and it's not like there aren't like intense guitar parts or anything, but like none of these songs are like, it's not November Rain over here. Like, I don't think you would have to be enormously technically skilled to play Guided by Voices songs. So there's definitely sort of an idea of like, oh, I could get up and do that.
Or maybe that is part of the appeal of lo-fi rock in general, is that it seems like accessible, like it brings the rock star dream a little bit closer to reality. And maybe, you know, that's why a lot of middle-aged guys have rock bands that they start with their buddies in their garage.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that Guided by Voices is a middle-aged rock band in the sense that Robert Pollard, when they were getting famous, was like already in his 40s, I think. He was born in 1957, so he's 4 years younger than my father. And like, it's kind of
probably significantly older than the other people in that genre at that time.
Yes, very much so.
I guess the other question I have, and I sort of wonder if you have more insight into this, is, you know, because they were moderately popular in, you know, the mid-90s.
Yes.
Clearly not to, you know, at that time when I was, you know, in my early tweens, I was more into pop music, so I probably was not tapped into that subculture. But I guess, I don't know, was it just like record store guys? Like, where was the fan base, or who was the fan base for people who weren't just, you know, going out and seeing them live necessarily?
I think it was a lot of record store guys. I am honestly not certain how, like, yeah, this is another thing where I think they were very popular as a live band to see, even among people who would not listen to the records, partially because all of the songs are 57 seconds long, so they go by very fast. And they basically, you mentioned before the like rock star thing, Guided by Voices basically puts on like a low rent American version of like an Aerosmith show.
Have you seen them live?
I have not seen them live. No. And they've reformed a couple of times, and now I feel like I would not. Also, I do not know if I would like to see a man my father's age get that drunk on stage.
So he's still doing it. Like, he hasn't shifted into an old guy state.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is that also I was certainly not listening to this music when it came out. And in my mind, like, B-1000 is the old Guided by Voices album, and Alien Lanes is the new one. Alien Lanes came out 22 years ago. Like, it's just entirely when I heard those albums. Mm-hmm.
We're all about 90s music here on This Is My Song.
That's true. That is true.
Or at least 90s music being put up against very contemporary music.
Yeah. So yeah, this is, I actually think it's a very interesting comparison between these two bands in terms of Midwestern one dude centered bands. But do you want a segue?
Let's I think I'll do my rating.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to figure out
what your standard is.
What will my scale be? So do you happen to know what preferred shitty domestic beer Robert Pollard likes to drink?
Oh man.
Piece of trivia for the true fans. Now I kind of want to look it up, see if it's online.
Wow. Okay. In 2014, Dogfish Head released a Beer Thousand, which was that's the only thing that comes up. I actually read a book on Guided by Voices, which is a pretty good book about them. I must have sold it, which is crazy because who would buy that book from me? But I do not have it in my apartment anymore. I should review a lot of their stuff. And one thing that I do remember from it, there were a bunch of albums I wanted to send you, mostly because there's like three songs on every album I absolutely love.
Hmm.
But one of the songs that I love is called Teenage FBI. And the chorus is, someone tell me why I do the things that I don't want to do. When you're not around me, I'm someone else. And it's like a very like personal song, and like a song that in the book, there's a part where the author is just interviewing Robert Pollard about different songs because the lyrics are so obscure. And he's talking about that one. And that was that he was teaching class and he turned his back on the class to pick his nose. And one of the kids in the class saw it and like called him out on it. And he was like, I don't need to be watched by the teenage FBI. And that was the genesis of the song, which is so disappointing to me.
Like, you're hoping that there's something, you know, far more meaningful.
Yes, yes, no. It was about...
It was about some kid catching a pig in his nose.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so let's say Schlitz.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Hams.
Yeah, ham sounds fine.
Okay. I would rate them 3 out of 5 hams.
Interesting.
And I don't know, I would be very curious to get the live experience because, and I've been burned before by loud, annoying live shows, but also have sometimes enjoyed them. Mostly to blame is Ann Arbor's main sort of alt concert venue, the Blind Pig, which had like some of the worst, the one of the worst sound systems known to man.
Amazing.
They would just be like, hey, this sounds shitty, let's just crank it as loud as it can go, maybe that'll fix it. No, it didn't do it. But anyways,
there is a concert film of their last concert, the first time they broke up, from 2004, called The Electrifying Conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is very long. But if you want to check it out, I actually could not find out if it was streaming on anything. Again, like, because I have not really paid attention to this band in a while, it's very difficult to know the degree to which in current music now people listen to them at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Because the thing is, like, if I just haven't heard, I don't think I've heard any of their songs.
Yes.
Just by passively being alive and around
in
the world.
And I realized that I have not, it like, part of the reason why it sounds like it's coming from so long ago for me is that, like, I, as far as I know, like, I don't think people play this music anymore.
Yeah, like, where would you hear it? Like, you think maybe, I don't know, like, I guess none of the songs are long enough to be on, like, the soundtrack to things.
Actually, one of the reasons that I got really into this band is that when I was working at a record store, I bought a soundtrack for 99 cents to a movie called Dean Quixote, which I've never seen and don't know anything about. But the soundtrack is incredible, and it's got like it's very much like 90s rock. And there's a very good Guided by Voices song on there.
Huh.
So it appeared on at least one soundtrack.
There must be more. I feel like I read something about it being on a Scrubs episode.
Sounds about right.
I don't think Dean Quixote exists. Wait, no, maybe. It doesn't have its own Wikipedia page, but I think it's mentioned on other artists' Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
This is weird.
It's got an IMDb.
Huh.
It has an actual website that is, a new comedy from the producer of Swingers. Oh, man, what's the copyright year on this website?
The movies came out in 2000.
Yeah. It's a good This is a good website. Oh, all of the actual movies, like the photo gallery is still there.
I don't know any of these actors. David Quain? Is that a name? Quain?
That's like someone took David Quain. David Quaid. No, wait.
David,
like,
Blaine and David Quaid?
And then David Spade. David Spade. And they all went into the mix together.
He was in Detroit Rock City. And EdTV. It's David Quain.
It's the incredibly famous David Quain.
All right, so on that note, let's end the first segment.
Yes.
David Quain.
Oh, Guided by Voices is in Dean Quixote.
Oh, so maybe that's how they got all people onto the album or the soundtrack. Hey, you want to be in a movie? David Quain's in it. And Brian Poth. Poth. I don't think these are real people.
Let's make a movie about aliens who come to Earth and trying to fit
trying
in
to make,
and
a,
make
movie.
A movie. And it's Dean Quixote.
This is my son. This is still Kathy Fisher. And still with me today is Mark Popham. In this segment, we will discuss my son, who I will say I had him on deck before Mark finalized Guided by Voices as the introductory, as the two son. My from son was already ready.
Yeah, I literally was afraid you were going to say Plague Dogs, where you were going to be like, you know what? I saw a movie a little bit ago. Really stuck with me. It's called Plague Dogs. You have to watch Plague Dogs now.
This is your life now.
This podcast is now just you inviting people on and then telling them Plague Dogs.
Plague Dogs. Everyone has to watch it because I had to endure it. No, I'm not Chris Shock. I'm not cruel.
Literally listening to that episode, hearing everything that happened to those poor dogs, it was just me going, oh no.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. It's
those poor dogs.
Bad in that, like, if you feel any emotion about anything, it hurts your heart.
Oh, well, good news. I don't.
All right. Okay, so you'd be fine with it.
Movie, but yeah, your son.
My son, yeah, I will introduce it. And, you know, on the topic of cis white people, the way that I got into this band is, of course, via NPR interview. Because when Strange Trails came out, the frontman, whose name I'm now very embarrassingly can't think of,
it's David Path.
Yeah, that guy was given an interview on NPR, and they played some clips from some of the songs and explained them. And I was like, oh, that sounds good. And basically sought out Strange Trails, adore it to death. Literally just will, I don't know. I feel like I can continually listen to this album forever and never feel like tired of it, and also sort of branched out to their earlier album Lonesome Dreams, and I really like them. Of course the band is Lord Huron, originally from Okemos, which is a town in Michigan on Lake or near Lake Huron, and then they moved to Los Angeles like Dirty Traders. And yeah, they're sort of it's an interesting combo of like folk music and like rockabilly sort of vibe and general Midwesternness.
Yeah, but there's, I mean, especially in Lonesome Dreams, I feel like there's a lot more, like, world music influence as well.
Yeah.
Yes, it turns out, so I was talking to my wife, and I was like, oh, yeah, Kathy chose Lord Huron, so I need to get those albums. And she's like, you've listened to Lonesome Dreams, like, 50 times. Like, when we're, like laying in bed reading, and, like, I'm on Twitter or whatever. Like, we'll put on music, and that's an album that comes up a lot. So I'd actually listened to the album a lot. Mm-hmm. And then I got Strange Trails as well. And then I found the EPs, the earlier EPs that, that the gentleman whose name I also don't know released and listened to those on Bandcamp. Are you looking up who the guy, Lord Huron guy,
Mr. Lord Huron, Ben Schneider. Yeah.
Ben Schneider. Yeah, and it's like I really enjoyed both albums. Listening first to Lonesome. Okay, this is going to sound like really shitty because we were just talking about Guided by Voices so long. But I was like, whoa, a lot of production on this one, huh, buddy? Like, oh yeah, sounds real nice. All the instruments are in tune.
Oh, well, they wanted to like balance all the different parts.
No, but I will actually say this. With this album, with Lonesome Dreams specifically, I couldn't hear the guy's voice in the mix. Where I think that in Lonesome Dreams, maybe he was very much using his voice. He was not using it in a traditional sense where like you would put the voice more audible than the music. He uses it as an element in the music, but not as like a showcase thing in Lonesome Dreams, I feel.
So more as an instrument.
Yes. And I was like, well, I wonder if this is the case in his, I was like, oh, well, let me check out like if they're demos or like, and that's, I went back to the EPs and listened to those, and no, entire, like that is very much the same in the previous albums. Mm-hmm. But then in Strange Trails, he does bring out his voice a lot more, which I was a fan of. But no, I really liked listening to this band. I will probably continue to listen to this band. I do really like Strange Trails, which is kind of interesting because it does not, It does seem like Strange Trails was not as well received as Lonesome Dreams was.
Yeah, I sort of realized that reading through Wikipedia pages today.
Yeah.
And that's surprising to me because I feel like there are a lot more straight up like pop-y, like catchy songs on Strange Trails. Whereas Lonesome Dreams is a lot more sort of atmospheric and moody.
Yeah. I will say Lonesome Dreams is a lot more like music that I could hear in a soundtrack or on a television show or something, in that it like that using the voice as an element means that maybe doesn't pop as much. And like one thing, the complaint I would have about Lonesome Dreams is that my brain does not necessarily grab onto individual songs in the way that I think that it does in, I think Strange Trails, it rewards repeated listens.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot in there, and I think that it kind of comes more undone if you listen to it multiple times. But with Lonesome Dreams, it's kind of difficult for my brain to crack it apart.
Yeah, because I think there's a little bit more sameness between the songs, whereas with Strange Trails, it's both the fact that there is kind of like a narrative thread through the album, but it also sort of cycles through genres from song to song, so they're a lot more distinct.
Yeah. I was a big fan. I did read a Pitchfork review of Strange Trails, which reminded me why you should never read Pitchfork reviews of anything, because it's completely useless and does not, like, it's just adjectives.
Uh-huh.
It's just a bunch of adjectives. And it's like, seems less woozy than the previous amber-tinted, hue-inspired. It doesn't fucking mean anything, Kathy.
Well, I mean, writing about music, you have to acknowledge that's hard. I mean, even talking about music is
hard.
Okay,
I will acknowledge that. I will say that the Pitchfork House style, which is the exact same as it was when I worked in a record store in like 2005. Like, the joke then was that every Pitchfork review was just a string of adjectives and then a like a rating between like 6.8 and 7.8.
Uh-huh.
Because the idea is that then if an album becomes critically acclaimed afterwards, if you gave it a 7.3, it's not that big of a stretch to, in your every 5 years, like best albums of the last 5 years, bump that up to like, you know, like 94 of the best 100 albums.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, writing about music is, I guess, hard, but these guys are very bad at it. But that doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, I always, for the two episodes of this podcast I've done so far that have been about music, I've had apprehension about them because I know that it's tricky for me to both communicate how music makes me feel and to talk about it in a sort of objective sense.
Yes.
I would say that Strange Trails particularly is one I think I'm better at, and I think that's because I like to talk about and like to think about the sort of the narrative concepts in it, which are heavily
really?
Sort of oriented around like zombies, sort of apocalyptic
yeah.
things, like people dying slash coming back from the dead.
His work is a lot about death in a way
yeah.
that, like, you I feel like you don't really hear a lot of artists nowadays, or like I do not think there's a ton of pop songs specifically like jangly folk in like infused pop songs about death.
I don't know, isn't that sort of one of the bases of like American folk
that
music?
Is true.
It's
that's
talking
really
about
true.
Death and you know, loss and pain.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of his songs are about the singer like reckoning with death and dying in a way where in American folk music a lot of times it's just like people died.
Too bad, it sucked.
Oh boy, so many people died.
Yeah, and I wonder, see, here's one of my reservations about them too, because I know I have, I don't know if it's technically a bad habit, but it's maybe I have a predilection towards the sort of like schmaltzy, like the more melodramatic and potentially cheesy something is, a lot of times the more I'll like it. Like I like sort of overwrought stuff a lot of times. And you know, the cool person that I want to be is like, no, you shouldn't like that. Or you should be above
that person
that.
Is like, have you heard Guided by Voices? It's very difficult to listen
it's
to.
Not even pleasant to listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
It's much cooler.
There's a good song that has snoring in it. I mean, I like in describing Lonesome Dreams and being like, it was difficult for my brain to catch on to. That feels like a really asshole thing to say, because that sounds like I'm complaining that it's like too nice sounding.
Hmm.
Which I also wonder the degree to which that is the distrust of like nice sounding music, especially in terms of folk music, comes from like concerns about authenticity, which are not especially valid or reasonable.
Hmm. I don't know. And I'm sure you could probably say, I mean, from what I know about this band and what I can intuit from both where they come from and, you know, especially, you know, Mr. Schneider having gone to my alma mater, attended my alma mater.
Really?
Well, yeah, I mean, Michigan is a pretty big school. But,
yeah, that's true.
That I would guess is not what most folk music people would consider authentic, quote unquote.
Yeah, well, fuck them.
I know, exactly. I mean, I would agree.
I mean,
them,
I don't know.
But
I feel like the songs are very specifically authentic towards where they come from. Or, I mean, okay, so Lonesome Dreams is a lot about, like, Lake Huron.
Uh-huh.
Like, it, a lot of it feels like you're at a lake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that even a lot of the imagery in Strange Trails, too, no, I can't think. I just will just not be able to think about any of the names of the songs, apparently.
I don't remember names of songs at all, partially because I never, like, I listen to music when I'm walking around with my headphones on, so, like, songs just come.
They come and go. Yeah, okay, yeah, so the one I was thinking about was Frozen Pines, or, like, Meet Me in the Woods also. Like, to me, they pretty strongly evoke Michigan. So I guess there's a certain amount of, it feels, like, connected to a state that I have primarily positive feelings about. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a certain connection there.
Yeah. No, but I really enjoyed it, and it's really good bicycle riding music. It's very like, I felt very City of Angels, 'cause I was biking over the Manhattan Bridge and it came on and I was like, yeah, to the inns, to the inns, to the inns, to the inns. I was like, oh, this is the finale, season finale of the OC right here.
Uh-huh. This is your montage.
Yeah, yeah.
They actually, Fool for Love was on Girls the week before last, in a weird context.
Yeah, well, some of us are a bit too guided by voices to watch Girls.
We don't watch Girls. I'm too cool.
I actually am desperately awaiting your son Girls episode.
That's another thing, another sort of thing I feel like I should be guilty about, because it's not what, I mean, it's what a certain class of cool people like and what a certain other class of cool people don't like.
So it's your guided by voices. Like, it's gonna be your episode where you're really defensive about a thing.
You have to find the right person to give it to, someone who maybe will really hate it.
Yeah, yeah,
which is potentially almost all of my friends.
I still haven't watched it, but it's also like, it's part of a, like, an anti-Lena Dunham stance I took in, like, God, 2011, that I have refused to revisit so far.
That's, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right, with being online, is once someone slips from, you know, they make a slip from being a non-problematic person, which, you know, obviously that lasts for, like, 0 days for most people, to being at least somewhat problematic, if you don't, like, make an effort to, like, actually figure them out, then you forever sort of condemn them to, like, oh, that person.
My big problem with Lena Dunham is partially because, so, like, part of the Lena Dunham story is that, so, like, Tiny Furniture is basically a chronicle of her decision to not get, like, an office job and instead take money from her parents and make a film,
mm-hmm.
which became Tiny Furniture. And I worked in the film industry immediately after that happened. And there were a ton of people who were inspired to take money from their parents and make a film in hopes of becoming Lena Dunham,
uh-huh.
or complain to me about how their parents would not give them enough money to make a film. So that is partially my, that is, I still hold that burning ember in my heart.
And I can totally see that. I definitely understand the, you know, in my experiences as a, film major, there were people like that I was around.
Yeah.
And actively disliked. But then I also think, like, if I had basically done the same thing, like, I basically have the same background of a, you know, relatively entitled upper middle class white girl. If I had gone the creative route, like, I would be exactly 100% as much worth derision as she is. So,
yeah, that is true.
To a certain extent, you're like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, annoying, pretentious people who, you know, have the financial ability to do whatever they want. But then you're like, yeah, but that's kind of where I am. So yeah, there's an element of self-loathing there.
Womp womp.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, now we're talking about Girls,
yeah.
which is a completely different son. Just cut all that out, because I forced you to talk about some future son now.
No, I'm trying to loosen the format, Mark.
Oh, okay.
I want to get that format loose.
Loose.
I want it loose and flowing like a big pair of pants. Like a big suit. Like a big suit, like
David Byrne.
David Byrne.
Now I'm like, now I'm remembering things that I like, but a lot of them, I don't know. It's weird. I feel like I don't like shit anymore. Or I'm just a big normie and I like Person of Interest now.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Actually, maybe, I don't think most people like Person of Interest.
Maybe the problem is that I'm like doing this. I was too concerned about finding something that made me sound cool. So I literally had to go back to when I was cool rather than being like, two-parter of Agent Carter tonight. Sign me up.
Oh, baby, I better get my comfy
get
pants.
Get my sweats.
Well, that's another thing that I've been thinking about, too, is, like, I need to get more of my trash sons in the mix. Like, I need to have an episode where I talk about Volcano.
I have not seen Volcano.
All right. For your future episode right there.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I also feel like when I was 22, so much more of my identity was built around liking things that other people didn't know about, which... First off, is a hilarious idea to think about in 2015 or 2016. Like, I do not think teenagers in the future will understand that as a concept. They'll be like, oh, it's like you haven't seen that Vine yet. That will be their only concept of like this of like media scarcity.
I don't know. What are alt teens like these days? I guess I only have a sense of what mainstream teens are like.
I don't even know what mainstream teens are like. I'm freaking out here.
I guess they're on Snapchat.
Yeah, they're all Grimes.
They're Grimes.
They're all Grimes.
It's just
now.
Grimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that yeah, I've had a lot of sons or multiple sons on this show that are things that I at one point I know I was like super passionate about. But it's not fresh anymore, and therefore I don't enjoy it as much. Like, oh, obviously, you know, definition of that being The Godfather, that first episode, because I, you know, hearkening back to, like, high school, so, you know, 10-plus years ago.
Yeah.
That was a while ago. I don't feel the same emotions anymore, which is then my other thing is trying to get sons of the things that I'm currently super interested in, which, you know, at the moment are, like, specific podcasts. So yeah, I don't know. It's hard to, you know, the human brain is a constantly changing thing.
I hate it too. It stinks.
Let's get rid of it.
That's our next podcast, Living Without Brains.
Brainless living. Or that at least we take out the whole like sort of the frontal lobe, and then it's like, you know, I enjoy sensations on my fingers and food. Laying down.
Wait.
Soft tones.
Your prefrontal lobe is what can that controls your like decision making skills.
Yeah. I want pure
Robin
lizard
Banks.
Brain. I want only my essentially like you know my my spine.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, so we're evolving. We've moved this podcast forward. I feel like.
Yeah, now it's a sci-fi podcast.
It's a sci-fi podcast. What if people didn't have consciousness?
Yeah.
Everyone would agree.
It would be much better.
It would be.
All
right, ready, rate?
Oh, yeah. What am I going to rate this? I would say I would rate this 4 out of 5 lakes.
Mm.
4 to 5 beautiful green Midwestern lakes.
Cool and fresh.
Yeah. But kind of stinky.
A little bit of a smell.
There's a smell to these lakes.
Key part of Lake Huron is it's the rocky one. It does not have pleasant beaches.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
It's the one where it's like, you have to be a little edgy to be on Lake Huron. It's no Lake Michigan, I'll tell you that. Anyways, yeah.
Lakes.
A good positive rating.
Yeah.
I like to hear it. And yeah. I look forward to having you back on the show.
Yeah, when I'll just talk about Person of Interest and like wearing jammies, being an old man.
Listen, if you do Person of Interest, I should introduce the new concept, the new twist I'm developing for this podcast, which is If you pick a sun, that's also my sun. We have a pro sun, co sun mega episode where we only talk about that sun for the entire episode. And person of interest is definitely a Kathy sun also.
That was actually one thing I was afraid of. I was like, I don't want to pick something that Kathy likes, which is why I chose Guided by Voices. We have fun.
Okay. Well, yeah. Good
sons.
Good sons
all around.
Good podcast. Is there anything you want to plug today, Mark?
I have another podcast. I haven't seen that. That I do with Whitney Yarner. At Whitney Yarner on Twitter.
This is my son guest.
Yes. And I am at Mark Popham on Twitter. And yeah, that's it. Like, give us a listen, why don't you?
I can vouch for the show. It's a good show. It's entertaining. You get to listen to Mark and Whitney's dulcet tones.
Dulcet.
Dulcet. Just the sweetest voices known to man. I would like to plug myself. I'm
as a thought thinker.
As a thought leader, one of the top thinkers available. Keep an eye out for my upcoming TredX Kathy talk. It's an off-brand TED talk.
Yep. I don't know how we're gonna do the like camera motion where the camera like zooms in from far away and comes up to your. Maybe we can like do it with a drone. Zooms in on your face and then pulls back while you're like future
ideas,
thoughts,
developing. Leading. Synergies. Yeah, no, that we'll figure it out. We'll get a whole setup and a whole green screen thing.
Yeah.
And other than this podcast, which you're listening to now, and which I hope you would be kind enough to rate and subscribe to on iTunes, because nobody has yet. I would like to also plug my old podcast, Brian Weekly, which I have actually been going back and listening to, and it's funnier than I remember it. Which I guess is a good sign. So, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.